Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the River Pod with myself, Tom Nash. And yes, it's another Super Clásico in Argentina. The Copa de la Liga quarterfinals were decided this week in very dramatic fashion. And yeah, wouldn't you just know it, River Plate landed right in the path of Boca Juniors. So we're going to be going over this almost unexpected or sort of unannounced Super Clásico. You know, nobody knew it was happening until 5 days before the game, but now it is. It's 4 days away as we record on Wednesday afternoon. It's going to be played in Cordoba on Sunday afternoon. So yeah, it takes priority today over the Copa Libertadores. We will be going over River Plate's win against Nacional and the fact that the Libertadores campaign is on track and its next stop is in Paraguay next week. But for now, a Super Clásico has dropped in our path and it's taken up all of our attention, hasn't it, Jack Tillman? Welcome to the pod and welcome to what I think I was describing there as our first ever surprise Super Clásico. I can't remember the last time a Super Clásico, a competitive one at least, just dropped into our path in 5 days' time without any prior notice.
Yeah, Tom, it reminded me maybe a little bit of the 2015 Copa Libertadores, the famous Gas Pimienta incident, when River and Boca met in the first round of the knockout stage. As some listeners may remember or may have read about, River came in. At that time, there was a sort of a league table for the groups that for the teams that qualified from the group, you know, 1 through 16. And River was 16 and Boca was 1. And a couple results had to happen, including that wild game that Tigres of Mexico was able to win for River 5-4 against Juan Aurich and put River through despite, you know, playing backup. So that was the least expected Super Clásico of my recollection, because I didn't expect River to go through. And of course, on Monday night, I didn't expect River to go through for a brief period of time either, because things did look a little dire. But yeah, another Super Clásico. I don't know whether to laugh or cry, Tom.
I don't think anybody does. And I think I feel sorry for the neutrals at this stage. The only neutral I've spoken to just said, oh, not again. You just don't get to hear about anything else in the whole country when there's a River Boca game. So I think it's probably bad news for everyone. We'll get into it later. But we'll talk about the ramifications and both teams' chances of winning, depending on, you know, certain in-form players, out-of-form players, and the managers and who's going to be injured and not. So let's get to that in a minute. But first of all, as you touched on there, we reached the quarterfinal, which for a time on Monday night looked unlikely, because we went to Cordoba to play Instituto in their own stadium, when we've never beaten them, by the way. We've only ever beaten Instituto when they've moved the game to the Kempes to get a bigger crowd. We've never actually beaten them on their home turf. So we broke that duck on Monday night. But for 45 minutes, we were heading out, Jack. We only needed a win or a draw. We only needed the draw, really. And we could even get through with a defeat if other results fell in our favour. But at halftime, none of those things were happening. River Plate were losing 1-0. Vélez were winning. Independiente were 2 goals up. They were surely not going to blow that, were they? No, there's no way Independiente would ever collapse. So it was looking pretty sticky, Jack. And you know, we exchanged a few messages at that point. There were a few people talking on Twitter about, will Demichelis last if River get knocked out tonight? And I did think that was a bit premature, but I don't know. I think the only observation I'd have on that point of the match, where I think there are two ways of looking at this. One of them is we were actually a bit unlucky, because there are games where we didn't get a good result this season. And we didn't deserve a good result either. We got what we deserved. I actually felt on Monday night that things were going fairly well. You know, Instituto are a bit lucky because they depended on a sort of freak accident from Vichagra, the type of thing that probably only happened once or twice in his career. I'm actually impressed by Vichagra overall since he's come to River. I think he needs time to bed in and become our midfield rock. But, you know, he makes a mess of this particular situation on the edge of his own box. He can't get the ball from under his feet. Caught in possession, very exposed, makes a foul. You know, it's a freak incident, and I also think it's a free kick as well. I actually think the foul he commits is just outside the line. So I was waiting for VAR to overturn this. Didn't, gives a penalty. Of course, the penalty scored. But I actually felt we were a bit unlucky to be behind because we created the chances to score, and the goal that came against us, I honestly was annoyed because I felt that wasn't a penalty, Jack. But what was going through your mind at halftime as we were, you know, staring down the barrel, really, of what would have been a quite humiliating exit to not be among the final eight teams in the country to fight out for this prize? You know, it's not happened to us yet, and it would be quite embarrassing the day that we're not amongst those top eight, wouldn't it?
Well, Tommy, I was definitely frustrated. You know, Miguel Angel Borja, who is really the only traditional number nine in our squad, other than Agustin Roberto, who's only 17, or actually I believe he's now 18, but still a child. And I think there was a lot of questions about where the goals were going to come from. And you and I have discussed on previous pods, Tom, you know, where are the goals in this side when it's not Miguel Angel Borja? And Colirio has a very good chance. I believe it was Solari who tore down the right and put in a low cross. And then Colirio, I mean, hits it over the bar from less than 6 yards away. And you think to yourself, oh my God, this guy that we bought from Tigre, you know, who had been a failure at Inter Milan. And, you know, I'm thinking these sort of things, you know, well, where's the goal going to come from? And that was very worrying for me. I think Instituto, you know, I don't think that they were a bad, Tom. I know you had said to me on Twitter, you know, that we were by far the better team, or that we were the better team, maybe not by far. You know, they hit the bar. They, you know, and the penalty, you know, the announcers that we had here never actually mentioned it. You know, there was no discussion of whether it would go to VAR or anything. So I guess I didn't really look into it until I saw your tweet a little bit later. And then I started to think, but, you know, at that point, you know, to be losing to Instituto and potentially going out, as you said, regardless of whether it was an invented penalty or not, is just so embarrassing. River never should have been in a position of needing any points in the final round, in my opinion. So if we had gone out, and yes, it was maybe a debatable penalty, even though in some circles it's not viewed controversially, you would have had to look at the other results rather than this one. You know, Banfield, just the one that springs to mind, because really River was not good enough throughout this whole campaign, despite having a better squad. So yeah, I was definitely worried though at halftime, and I sort of expected us to go out and all hell to break loose on social media.
I was a little bit more optimistic than that. I thought when we won 1-0 down, I did think we could throw on all our attacking players and salvage an equalizer. I wasn't expecting it to be as easy as it was in the end. I wasn't expecting us to win 3-1, but I did feel like we could probably get an equaliser. You know, when we've chased games this year, we have tended to get the goal that we've needed. So I was never quite writing this off as much as I can. But yeah, I think that the bigger, wider issue, Jack, was that we've not been good enough over the course of those 14 group matches, have we? It's not about Monday night. Monday night was definitely not our worst performance this year, but there have been too many games which, you know, we're ahead against Independiente, slipped. Head against Tashers by 2 goals, slipped. We're head against Boca, and that slipped. And we're head against Argentinos, and that slipped as well. So we've got 8 points dropped from winning positions there. So just two more. Holding on to one of those four games earlier in the campaign would have left us through already on Monday. It wouldn't have even been, you know, you'd like to ideally qualify looking around the group with 3 to 6 points to spare, wouldn't you? But it was a lot closer than we wanted it to be, but we did make it, and we actually made it through top in the end. You know, just a freak series of results. I think it was a very exciting night of football, though, wasn't it? Because different teams were changing places. You know, at one point of the night, Independiente were going through, and they were delighted, and River were going out, and Demichelis was under pressure. And then it turns on its head. River are through, and we're happy, and Independiente are out, and they're complaining, and Tacheres are also complaining about the refereeing, and Argentinos were close to winning the group, but they conceded a last-minute equaliser. And, you know, there was a lot of drama going on. So I think it was a good night, as was Tuesday night when Boca qualified as well. I think it was a good night for the Copa de la Liga because, you know, at least we got that. Like you say, we all lament this regret this format that Argentine football is played in, but, you know, at least it gave us in the middle of the season, in the middle of April, a qualification night with a lot of drama and a lot of adrenaline, which, you know, at least we're getting that, despite the fact our football's played in a horrible format. At least we did get a memorable and exciting midweek of football here in Argentina. So, yeah, there's probably the one reflection I'd have is that I think Chiqui Tapia can be happy that his football's had a good week, which he doesn't get to say that very often.
Yeah, and I think I have to say congratulations to Caudillo for his first River hat trick, and obviously he had that memorable late goal against Belgrano in the last Copa de la Liga, but I think this is his coming out party for River, and we hope that he can only go on from here and continue. Obviously, I don't expect him to score a hat trick or even score a goal every time out. He's not going to be our main artillery man when Borja is healthy, but I two headers, including one from a corner delivered from Echeverri that's on the spot, and he was about to be taken off the field for Barco, which is a substitution. I still don't understand why Barco was coming in for the Diablito, who was in the first half our main inspiration. And then the third goal, he gets a rebound and he might have been crossing it, but it hits off the post and goes in. It's a very fine finish, regardless of his original intention. So yeah, congratulations, Colidio. I think a player that I don't know if we've doubted, but we sort of made the joke that to score a goal, what this guy has to do is go through, nutmeg three players, do a, Cristiano Ronaldo style bicycle and do all this stuff. And then, well, in the reality, when you put the ball on his head, he can do it. It doesn't have to be too complicated. And he was very efficient on Monday night, and I'm very happy for him. And it still will be interesting to see now when Borja is back in the side, where does he play Colidio? Because Tom, I think we can all agree that as a winger, it is not the spot for him.
Oh God, I actually audibly groan every time that 11 is named and he's on the wing. And my wife looks over thinking, oh, what's happened? Has our daughter fallen over and knocked her head? I'm like, no, just, it's football stuff, don't worry. But every time I see Colidio on the left wing, I groan. But yeah, I think I'd like to see, like you, Jack, probably Colidio and Borja both play centrally, leave the wings to our fullbacks. I think Solari is a player who's more dangerous off the bench in his short cameos. We all know those have produced great results as well. So that's how I would love to see this unfold from now. You can't predict any manager's thought path, but you definitely can't predict De Michelis, because his starting 11s are so random. And this is probably another thing to call out here, is I think this is the first time that we've seen an 11 which we all approved of. You know, that happened against Nacional. We'll get to the Libertadores in a minute. And it happened against Instituto. He maintains the same team to the degree which he can with Borja out injured. It feels like it's time. It's time to settle on an 11, settle on a pattern of play, settle on names, only move it one or two names every week for the suspension or injury that's cropped up in that week. But this thing of just changing over, I read a tweet this week showing how many players he's changed from one match to the other all season. And most weeks it was five players, 5-5-6-3-3-5-5. It was some huge numbers. You just never see that happen. So I'm really hoping we've settled on an 11 there. And I really hope Colidio's can be a turning point for him, because he's been good or okay for River so far, but I think there's potential for him to be a lot better. And I think that will happen if he plays centrally. I think that will happen if he gets confidence, if we settle on a team. I really, really like the potential of this player. I have for a few months now. So, yeah, I hope, like you say, that is his coming out party now for River. Those three goals by Facu let us win the group. And then we watched on Tuesday night. And to our horror or delight or indifference, depending who you're speaking to, Group B evolved with Boca getting the win they needed against Godoy Cruz, and a couple of other results going their way. And lo and behold, they make it through in fourth place, which means they play the winner of Group A, River Plate. So, Jack, I think you and I are in the camp of people who would rather not have this happen. And I think, you know, when I say that as well, I think a lot of Bokovar say, ah, look at you, you're scared, you've got no confidence, you think you'll lose. I mean, honestly, I never want it to happen. Even if I think we're going to win, I still would rather. It's just a less stressful week for everybody, for the whole city of Buenos Aires, for the whole nation of Argentina. It's a less stressful and heart-pounding week when there isn't a Super Clásico. You know, I think I would much rather have seen Lanús or Defensa y Justicia in the quarterfinal, you know, have at least a slightly calmer afternoon on Sunday. But no, it's not to be. It's, you know, it's we're straight in at the deep end already, if you like. I would much rather this being a final or semi-final. But no, we're straight up into a matchup with Boca. I mean, just to start, Jack, would you rather have avoided them, or are you happy that we've got a Super Clásico on the table?
I would have rather avoided them for a number of reasons, Tom. And the first one is sort of going by what you were just discussing. I'm obviously not in Buenos Aires, but the last few times before the Clásico, I have said to you, I'm very glad I'm not in Buenos Aires because, you know, it's I don't know if Boca River Boca is still the greatest rivalry in the world. I tend to obviously be biased and think that it is, but I can say with very assuredly that it is the most toxic rivalry in the world. You know, I obviously in this day and age of the internet, I can see what fans of other teams are thinking, and I can look at newspapers from all over the world. I can obviously, I do luckily speak a few different languages, but I obviously have Google Translate. So we can really get an idea of what's going on in other places, what's going on in the Rome Derby, what's going on in the Milan Derby, the Clásico in Spain, even in, you know, what's going on in Brazil, in the clubs in Rio and Sao Paulo. But man, the hysteria that surrounds this match is just insanity. And, you know, Tom, like you go to the front page of La Nación, the internet page, and sure enough, right there, Super Clásico is one of the top three stories there on the front page. You know, I follow the UK news, Tom. If you go to the Times, for example, I guess for foreigners, you know, not sure for actual Brits, but I go to the times.co.uk. I never see anything about the Premier League when you immediately go to that website. And with La Nación, whenever there's a Super Clásico, it is always plastered everywhere. And it's the same thing with the print version. If you're in Buenos Aires, you know, it's just gotten so crazy and social media has made it worse. I almost feel like we're at a period, if those that remember when Cristiano Ronaldo and Messi were both in their pomp, Tom, and you had that spirit period where I think Real Madrid and Barcelona met four times in a month, less than a month. There was a Copa del Rey final, there was a league match, and then there was a Champions League semifinal. And after that, I think everyone was like, okay, nobody cares anymore enough. It's just so overhyped. There was obviously a lot of diving and theatrics that was going on. I remember, you know, Busquets and Dani Alves and some of these guys getting involved in that. And I feel like we're getting to that point sort of with the Boca River as I try to, you know, stand back a little bit. Like you said, it's a bad week to be a neutral. I feel like we've had so many. We've had the final in Madrid. You have this debate that everyone that's interviewed in Argentine football has to be asked, what's worse, losing a final to your classic rival or being relegated? You know, it's just gotten to this point where I'm honestly sort of sick of it. I want to beat them, but I'm a little bit sick of it. So that's me getting a lot off my chest right there, Tom. But I think in on social media, the fact that the Boca game, you know, it would have been better, I'll argue, to have gone out on Monday night against Instituto than to have gone through and lose to Boca.
Yeah, one of those two managers is going to end up wishing that they actually got eliminated this week.
Yeah, because... and I don't think that that's right, Tom, because, you know, we'll get into this deeper, but, you know, Boca, this is their main competition. Like, I think that the toxicity of this rivalry is such now that Boca does not want to win the Sudamericana because back in the day, both clubs used to play in it every year, and then the Libertadores in the spring and the Sudamericana in the fall, or vice versa, you know, in the seasons in South America. But now that this is like an embarrassment for Boca, you know, I don't think that they want to win the Copa Sudamericana. I mean, Cavani hasn't even played yet in that tournament. So this is all of it for them. Whereas we, as you said, we have to look forward to a match in Paraguay where we are going to take our main 11. So that's another factor to think about this. And the other one is the guy I just mentioned, Edison Cavani, has been on fire, relatively speaking, basically since the last Superclásico that was tied 1-1, and Cavani was absolutely dreadful and was taken off relatively early. And that also worries me. And then there's also just the law of averages. At some point, Boca is going to have to beat River. We're not going to beat them. And I know some people that are very fiery and take this so seriously, which obviously I do too, but I'm just a realist. I know I've been following this team. I've been following this sport for many, many times. No team is going to beat, you know, their main rival forever, indefinitely, especially when it comes to big knockout style type matches. And at some point they're going to beat us. I certainly hope that it's not this time, but there is a chance. I would say it's probably 50-50 at this point.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. Yeah, I think it is 50-50. And you're right as well. We're two evenly matched clubs, whether you love Boca and hate River or vice versa. Like, we are two very evenly matched clubs with biggest resources in Argentina, a third of the national fan base at least, world-famous stadiums, high-quality squads, good youth system, pumping players into the field. Yeah, we're two evenly matched teams. We're not talking about Aldosivi or even Newell's or Central here. Like, we are talking about a club that's in our bracket, and so are they. So you're right. The law of averages states that you're not going to win and win and win and win forever, right? I think that's a great call out about Cavani. I think there are four players I wanted to actually touch on in this. Two on the Boca side, two on the River side. So Cavani's the one, yeah, because like you say, he's suddenly hit form, hasn't he? And that, the goal that gets them through to the quarterfinal is brilliant. It's a brilliant breakaway goal with Advíncula coming down the right wing. Spots Cavani in a little bit of space, not even, 20, 30 yards alone, but he pulls away from a defender by about 5 or 6 yards. Sumptuous first time finish into the far corner. So yeah, him hitting form was one of the things I think we all wanted to not see. The rest of Argentina, we would have happily see him in that useless and hopeless mode that he was in 6 months ago. That's bad news, but I think there's some good news coming out of La Bombonera as well, because Cristian Medina was sent off during this game. Boca had to get through the game with 10 men. Now, he's a player I like a lot. He's probably one of the Boca players that I've liked most over recent years. I really rate him. I think he's a very accomplished central midfielder. He even scored the equalising goal at the Monumental back in February. So, without him playing the last Superclásico, we win, hypothetically. Who knows? But I think he's destined for Europe. He's had a great career at junior level for Argentina. So I'm very happy that he's missing. And I've been out for a coffee around the corner here today in Palermo in Buenos Aires. And, the waiter knows me. He's a big Boca fan. And he was very, very cautious. He said, well, I'll predict one result with Medina. I'll predict another result without him. So, and that between him and Eki Fernandez, they did a very good job in marshalling Echeverri, three guys who all know each other very well from the Argentina under-23 setup. They know each other very well, and they kept him under wraps really in the last Superclásico. He didn't get to do much damage. So who knows? Hopefully it opens some spaces in midfield for Echeverri to play in. Eki Fernandez will still be on the field, but I still think without Medina there, put it this way, Echeverri seeing that Medina absence and his eyes are lighting up. He's very happy to hear that news. So I think that's very good news. And then on our side, it's all about the two injured guys, isn't it? Because the Superclásico's on the horizon and we've got doubts over our best centre-back and our best striker, because there's almost no doubt that Paulo Díaz there's no doubt that he's the best defender at River Plate. There's almost no doubt that he's the best defender in Argentina at the moment. I've read some people call him the best in the Americas, which might be a stretch, but I don't really know, actually, because I don't watch the Brazilian leagues or other leagues in general. So maybe it's right, but I think you could probably call him the best defender in the Argentine Copa de la Liga. And he's withdrawn with a knee problem at halftime on Monday. So it's not really clear at this stage whether he plays, and if he does, if he's at 100%. And that brings us on to Borja as well, because he also missed Monday's game with an injury. It looks like a fairly light one. I've seen De Micheli saying he's optimistic that Borja will return. for Sunday. But, you know, if he does return, what state will he return in? Because he was rushed into the last Superclásico in February after an injury, and he didn't perform. It was premature, you know. He was on the field, but really he was only firing at 40%. He barely moved. He didn't look threatening. When he did get a chance to score, he didn't really do anything with it. So, you know, will we get Borja back, and will we get the fit Borja back as well? That's another question. So, you know, just as my Boca supporting friend around the corner was cautious about their chances without Medina, I would be cautious about our chances without Paulo Díaz and without Borja as well, because those are two guys. I honestly think our chances drop by 10 or 15% of winning this match if we don't get those two guys back for Sunday, especially given the form that Cavani's in. You know, you want Paulo Díaz on the pitch there with him. So, yeah, that's probably some of the main focuses. He's on those guys at the moment here in Buenos Aires.
Certainly, Tom. And one other name I'm going to throw out at you is I was very impressed by Manuel Lanzini's entrance the other night. Maybe not very impressed, but I was encouraged, as I try to avoid hyperbole. As everyone knows, he's a player I'm a big fan of. Was really hoping that he would have had much more of an impact. Injuries aside, we have to be honest and say he's been very underwhelming. And that's about as positively as I can spin it. But did you see some encouraging moments as well? And do you think there's a part for him to play? He still hasn't scored since he's returned to River Plate. I believe he might not have even had an assist. I don't know that off the top of my head, but do you see any role for Lanzini as we get ready for the Superclásico?
I do, yeah, because I think he was all encouraging also against Nacional when he came on the previous week. I think that was one of the main things that encouraged fans, that he looked good on the ball, he looked in control, he looked like he could actually beat the man and make something happen, which he was sort of reluctant to do last year. He was just receiving the ball, passing it backwards or sideways. You know, he didn't make any, he didn't break lines, as they say. But now we've seen it look a bit different in the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, that's very encouraging. I think he could have a role to play from the bench, you know, with his experience all those years in Europe. That's probably a player that we'll be looking to either to hold on to the result or to go for a better one in those final 20 minutes. So, yeah, I would definitely expect to see him appear from the bench in the final 20 minutes in Córdoba.
Yeah, and I would certainly want to have him over Barco, who I thought, again, was poor. And the difference between Barco and El Diablito at this point is enormous. The overall, the way that the team conducts itself, it's the way it's pleasing on the eye also diminishes as soon as Barco comes in the game, at least from my point of view. So I like to see Lanzini up. It's good to have him back and hopefully getting back to his best self.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, Barco is completely devoid of all that confidence that he started the year with, and he's drifting into the same irrelevance that Lanzini himself was in 6 months ago. You know, I think Lanzini started being moved out of the team, really. He became largely irrelevant, and I think Barco's on that track as well. After making such an impact at the start of the year, you know, he's drifted into irrelevance, and there's just no confidence there. And it's literally all about Echeverri at the moment, isn't it? The game all happens when Echeverri gets the ball, doesn't he, basically? He can break lines, he can shoot, he can pass. You know, the guy is so complete. The goal he scored last week was just sensational as well. So, yeah, finally lucky to have him. And it's a great comeback as well from him, as well, from Echeverri, because, you know, at the start of the year, there were people that wanted him frozen out. They wanted him to spend the year cutting the grass around the edge of the Monumental. And, you know, when you look back to that whole circus that happened in at the end of December, you know, it was ill-timed, it was clumsy, and it was unfortunate. You know, what he was saying was, the message that he was giving, was trying to give, was very different to the one that people interpreted, because people decided to be offended that, you know, this guy's saying, oh, I'm going to leave. I'll stay for 6 or 12 more months and I'll leave on a free. I don't care. He don't care about this club. That's what people decided to interpret, when really all he was saying was he was prematurely revealing that he's right on the verge of signing for Manchester City. So no, there won't be another contract for River. There might be 6 or 12 more months on loan, but there won't be another contract, because we're receiving it from Man City tomorrow and I'll be signing it. So, you know, it was just a misunderstanding, immaturity and experience on his part as well, which is fine. He's an 18-year-old lad. So yeah, but he's you know, he's turned around his popularity at the Monumental massively, which segues me into the Nacional Libertadores game, if you want to go there, Jack.
Yeah, let's do it.
As promised, River Plate versus Nacional, as we, you know, we've sort of flipped the order this week. We'd normally go Libertadores first and then Copa de la Liga second, but well, whenever a Super Clásico lands with the splash that that makes, you have to put it in first place and cover the Copa Libertadores second. So, briefly then, Jack, I mean, you know, no games this midweek as we record here on Wednesday afternoon, but pretty satisfactory night last week. I think most people that saw that River 2-0 win over Nacional with goals from Echeverri's stunning goal from over 30 yards and Colidio adding one in the final seconds. I think most of us felt that was the most convincing and you know, encouraging win that River's had in all year, or at least in 6 or 8 weeks, because, you know, we've won a few games unconvincingly, but it felt like we were there. It felt like De Michelis named a proper 11. He included Vichagra, included Aliendra next to him. You know, he included an 11 for a Copa night. You know, as soon as he named that team, everybody said, yeah, that's a coherent 11. Well done, which has been one of the main criticisms of De Michelis, is his starting 11. But he names a solid starting 11. And we go and do the business, Jack. And, you know, I don't think it was the perfect performance. I don't think we absolutely overwhelmed them or fantastic. But, you know, Nacional had their chances too. But it did feel like River Plate was the better team on the field, and we actually deserved that win, Jack. Were you happy? I mean, I would say I was 7 out of 10. You know, definitely give that performance a 7 out of 10 against Nacional. Were you as happy as I am with this 2-0 victory over the Uruguayans?
Yeah, I think it could have been a little bit more. I think the River had so much more quality than the Uruguayan outfit. The Copa Libertadores, there's no style points though, so I think I'm very pleased, because you get through. It is the hardest home match, at least on paper, that we'll have. It is. We talked a lot about how it is against a continental giant, and you know, honestly, Tom, I hate to say it, or maybe I like to say it, but having the away fans there sort of overshadowed the whole match, what was going on the pitch. I was watching, you know, obviously a lot of videos after of some back and forth between the River supporters and the Nacional supporters. And, you know, for those that don't know, Argentina and Uruguay are very similar countries culturally. They speak Spanish in a very similar manner. You were able to have this back and forth before the game that was understanding. You know, they were saying to us that we went to the B, you know, que no salta se fue la B, and we were saying you're a small team, and they said, well, we've won the World Cup, Club World Cup 3 times. And it was just the kind of banter that you used to get when I started going to River back in, you know, 2010-11, that you just don't get anymore. You know, Nacional, the last time we played them, there were no fans because of COVID. So it's, how long has it been since we had another Spanish-speaking team with a fan base that's going to understand that sort of back and forth, you know? Like, what you get a lot all across the UK, you know? And I've been to a Swansea City game, for example, and I don't remember that much about the game. I do remember Federico Fernandez scored. But, you know, I remember the West Brom fans starting to sing God Save the Queen and all the Swansea fans whistling. And I remember the Swansea fans starting to sing, you know, we'll sing on our own. We'll Swansea City, we'll sing on our own. And that's the kind of stuff that you remember when you go to the ground, you know, Tom. And obviously, as you know, growing up, going to Wolves as long as you did, you don't necessarily remember every single intricate thing that happened, especially when I was at a Swansea, you know, what was I doing there, you know, 8 years ago. But I remember bits and pieces because of the fans, and I really think it's sad that we don't get that anymore in Argentina, and I hope one day we can get that back, because it was a real treat. And even just hearing the two sets of supporters on TV, you know, forget the Twitter videos after, you know, you could hear it on the broadcast, and that was great. And then, yeah, as far as the performance, the goal from Diavito is fantastic, and you know, we already were raving about how well he played in Cordoba. So we asked a few pods ago, when is this guy going to really start making an impact and prove that he can do it for River and not just for the Argentina under 17s? And well, I think he's more than doing it at this point. And I'm already, as skeptical as I was at times, I'm already sad that there's probably only, or in April, seven, eight months left of watching this guy play in a River shirt, because when he's on, he's something special.
Yeah, he's really proven why he is so special. You know, a lot of us were questioning if he was really that special, and well, the answer recently has just been yes, hasn't it? I mean, he really is. So yeah, I think he's heading to Girona as well in January, they say. I don't know if there's a chance for us to try and get six more months there, because you know, it's the middle of a European season. Wouldn't it be better for him to go in June of 2025? Yeah, perhaps we can take a punt and get him 6 months more, especially if he is developing well and getting minutes at River. But yeah.
Yeah, and if I may, Tom, going back to my point about the away fans, especially because when you are back home and you get to go to a game and you experience, you know, what it's like to have the away fans in the ground, does that affect your match going experience if you're just going to go to, say, a River Rosario Central on a random Saturday afternoon? Obviously, you have a lot of safety concerns when there are away fans. There is that. Which another thing I have experienced, I hate to admit, I have been on a corner of Libertador when the Vélez fans came in and there were bottles flying and from the Vélez buses, and you know, some people got off and tried to fight. It was a very scary scene. There was women and children and older people, and also just people that weren't even going to the match. So that part aside, but as far when you're sitting in the stands, do you miss having the away fans, or has it been so long in Argentina that you've accepted that this is how it is?
I think you're just used to it now in Argentina on average Sunday. It is nice, though, and there is a nice feel to it in the Libertadores. I was there last year when Colo-Colo were there. They spend the whole, a similar dynamic. They spend the whole evening singing that River Plate had been relegated. And then River Plate was singing, because it was 2022, He who doesn't jump is not going to Qatar. So, you know, there was a bit of national banter going on as well, as well as saying that people that the B in Argentina is actually a stronger division than the A in Chile. So, like, yeah, there was a bit of back and forth. Yeah, it is nice to see on the Libertadores, but you know what? It just causes so much hassle and so much security, safety concerns, like you said, Jack, that I'd probably rather it not happen on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
I think it's in that state.
I think when I, when I remembered that incident against Vélez all those years ago and how bad it could have turned for a lot of people, my mother was actually with me and we were going to the game together, just innocently standing on the corner of Libertador. And, you know, again, why would you send the Vélez buses with these, you know, the Vélez fans? I don't know if they were Barra Brava or what, you know, was going on, but why these people were going right down Libertador, which is the biggest street in at least the northern part of Buenos Aires, no one will ever understand. So yeah, when I think about that, I'm glad maybe that away supporters are not allowed, because it certainly causes a lot of security and serious risk. I mean, because I've seen it firsthand. Like I said, I mean, they were throwing bottles. You know, if you're in the States, imagine a 40 of beer being thrown and on the concrete and going everywhere. I mean, it was very, very dangerous. So probably for the best.
Okay, so it all leaves us in handsome position in a group, which whose name escapes me. I think it's Group H. But yeah, it's all going to plan at the moment. And as forecast, really, River Plate with 6 points, Libertad and Nacional both with 3, and Caracas, no, hang on, Táchira with 0 points at the bottom. So yeah, I think that group is basically going to unfold as we all thought, with River Plate in control and then Libertad and Nacional fighting for that second place. The Copa resumed just 3 days after the Super Clásico, by the way. So the players are in Córdoba on Sunday afternoon. I'm imagining they fly back to Buenos Aires on Sunday night. And then on Tuesday, they're going to have to go back to Paraguay because the next game is away to Libertad in Asunción, and it's on Wednesday night. So, yeah, bigger night on Sunday, but then another big night 3 days later. So, yeah, great time of year, Jack, with football flowing at us from all angles. And I'll actually go and have to turn my TV on in a minute to lap up the Real Madrid and Man City feast, which you all know how that finished now, listeners. But it's, yeah, non-stop football at this time of year from all parts of the planet. I'm absolutely loving it.
Yeah, it's certainly a great time of year. And those games yesterday, Tom, Champions League, were very entertaining, controversial, just what we love. So hopefully the Superclásico for any neutrals listening is great. And for any River supporters, ends 3-0. And for any Boca supporters, too, 3-0 River.
So, yeah, that's your next game then, folks. Sunday, it's always at a nice time, so there's an international audience involved for Superclásico. So it's 3:30 in Argentina. 3:30 in Argentina. Absolutely no respect for the Sunday afternoon siesta. I don't like that. 3:30 in Argentina. That's 2:30 if you're on Eastern time. 7:30 in the evening for UK and Ireland. 8:30 on Central European time. So, yeah, quite an international friendly kickoff this week. So, Jack, we will speak probably on Monday if we win, maybe later than Monday if we lose. Let's see how it goes. But let's all keep our fingers crossed for a good result on Sunday, and we'll speak next week. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Bye.
Thanks, everybody. See you next time on the River Pod. Vamos, River. Bye-bye. Se viene Martínez para el gol, y va el tercero, y va el tercero, y va el tercero, y gol de River, gol de River.